in commercial real estate, yes, you can accelerate fast. You can accelerate fast, but you can also decelerate fast as well. So you got to curb that risk, because when you start syndicating or when you start raising money, like, okay, now you're risking their money.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you so much for joining us on another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. In today's episode, I have the pleasure of interviewing my friend Tyler. So Tyler started his real estate investing journey in 2015 with single family homes and small multifamily apartments. You know, this started as he was obtaining his mechanical electrical engineering degree from the University of Wyoming. Now, Tyler worked as an engineering manager for 4 years while he built and expanded his real estate portfolio. In 2020, the focus grew and shifted to self-storage, RV, mobile home parks, short-term rentals, multifamily, car washes, third-party asset management, and business acquisition. Soon after, in 2023, he went full-time in real estate investing. Tyler now has $50 million in assets under management and has raised over $10 million in capital, building and structuring his portfolio with many different beneficial and creative partnerships. Without further ado, won't you please join me in welcoming Tyler to the show? Why don't we kick this off with you telling us a bit about yourself, you know, where and how you found success as you define it, and maybe share something, you know, with the audience that they wouldn't know about you.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Tyler. I live up in Wyoming and grew up in Wyoming. I left Wyoming for a little while to play some college hockey and go to school out in Wisconsin, but I came back to Wyoming, finished my engineering degree here at the University of Wyoming. I'm married. I've got a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 6-month-old. So that's quite the handful. I got into the real estate space in 2015 while I was going to school here. And we'll go into some of the successes of that journey. But for a while, I was an engineer, basically working 2 jobs, doing real estate, and I was a full-time engineer. That's what my degree was. That's also what my wife is. She's also a mechanical engineer. And maybe that's the interesting thing that a lot of people don't know about me and my family is we're both mechanical engineers. That's how we met. She is now a mom, and she doesn't do that anymore. But I did it until February of 23, and then I went full-time real estate, which... that was kind of a little piece of the success puzzle, I suppose, there. So stepping back, let's define success how I look at it. I think it's multi-level. You have your family success. So you've got your spouse. Are you and a dad. So that right there has its own little area of success. Like, you know, you have your family to feed, you house them, you take care of them. If you're able to hit all those, well, I define that as success in that, you know, realm of who you are. Jumping over to real estate, that kind of gets you towards the family necessities. Now you're jumping over to, okay, well, what's the goal side of your success? Do you want to work a W-2, or do you want to have the flexibility of what real estate can do for you? Does that make sense, Doug? Like, kind of,
yeah.
Breaking it up into, okay, you have the necessities of being a spouse and a father. And then, now what does your family want? Like, as are we focusing real estate here, Doug?
Yeah. Real estate and success mindset. So honestly, okay. Wherever you want to take it.
Okay. So a lot of people, they go after the money, and the higher the revenue, the higher the money, the higher the net, well, that might be more success. Well, yes and no, because when you're going after all that, you know, there's also lots of levels of stress that comes with that. And maybe that's not the goals, that maybe that's not what your family would define as success. You know, maybe you're needing to step back a little bit and say, okay, we want the freedom and we want what the money can do for you. What doors does it open and what flexibility is obtained when you're hitting those different levels of goal-based success? So that's how I understand it. You got to kind of split it because there's the necessity and there's the goals. So.
No, I love that. And sort of we're talking about, hey, once you have your necessity covered with your real estate investing, for example, or side business, whatever that is, then that's like one level of success you've hit, financial freedom, right? Yeah. But with what you're saying, also, we can add so much stress going that route that then are we negatively impacting our health? That's something that we got to consider. You know, and are we neglecting our family? You know, so we have to weigh everything, I believe, is like what you're saying. And I do have two quick questions for you about that. One, you know, do you have any tricks for those of us who are working a full-time job and then real estate investing, trying to take care of properties, you know, after we punch out from our full-time job?
Sure. Yeah. So I did that for years. And the way I looked at it was, okay, which one covers your four walls? So like you got your W-2 job, steady income. If that is what supports your needs, your necessity success box, we'll call it, you got to make sure that that's covered. You know, you can't slack that one or risk losing that one. So you got to make sure that's covered. Now, I'm a strong believer that you get ahead outside of your 40-hour work week. So you work your 40-hour week for that one. Well, if you want to get ahead, if you want to build, if you want to grow, well, you got to tap into those other hours. So for years, I just had this understanding with my wife that, you know, my lunch break at work was sometimes switching gears. And then I get home and frequently, were you still grinding, you know, at midnight or at 1 p.m. or 1 a.m.? So you've got to figure out and have that understanding with your family that while you're building that, that understanding has to be there. And that is really difficult with spouses sometimes. You know, you got to set the expectations. It's awesome when they're involved. My wife is very involved in our growth and in the management. So she was on board, but you got to be able to transition. You got to be able to prioritize the one that covers your walls, you know, keeps that roof above your head. And then to optimize, you use your extra hours to just push it. And that's tough in real estate because banks are closed during those hours. And, you know, brokers might not be as available during those hours. And you got partners in different time zones. And so you have to figure out how to navigate that.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I agree, I love that. And one of the things that, you know, I picked up on, and this is something that I noticed, a while back, right? But I've also got two friends that are engaged to be married, and I'm just sharing with them, like, the impact that it's had on my life. It's been huge, such a huge blessing. You know, and it can be a curse though. So this is where I think, you know, I'd like to get your thoughts on this also, but picking a good mate, one that is supportive, one that's going to love you unconditionally, and then again, one that is supportive, is key. That can really, really, you know, set us up for success and to be able to, you know, create the life of our dreams, which a lot of, you know, men and women, I would say, we're kind of wired to do. We need to be working towards those dreams, you know? So yeah, what are your thoughts there?
Sure. Yeah, you have to find that balance. I was fortunate that my wife has a business mind and she sees the bigger picture, and she took a lot of the property management off of my plate and she dove into that. So 100%, find the balance, but at the same time, when you have two different angles on a problem, you know, my wife thinks very differently than I do, and we're able to look at things from different angles, and you do come up with different solutions or different ways around the business when you have that. So that's pretty critical. And they've got to be understanding of, you know, your phone goes off at 5:30 at the dinner table sometimes, and you got to have the understanding that sometimes you have to take those calls. Sometimes you can put them aside and say, okay, this is family time. But that's key.
Yeah. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but in the engineering space, in the engineering world, it's real big to get a second pair of eyes on something. You're engineering something, you get your buddy to look at it, your manager, so on and so forth. And so that same philosophy, it's so interesting because we can be working on a project or a problem and trying to solve it, and all we can see is this couple of, you know, solutions over here. And then our buddy, our partner, or whoever, a friend, has got a different perspective. They can, you know, provide a solution that, you know, is just excellent there. So it sounds like you and your wife work well together in that capacity.
We do, yes. Yep. And you got to have that same feel with your business partners, like you just said. I mean, you know, our projects, we all look at it just a little bit different. And we've all been in a situation where, you know, that strategy bit us. And, you know, one of us has a little bit of experience to just shed light on the problem. And that is the balance you got to find in that aspect as well.
Yeah, I love it. Now, what I'd like to actually do, and this is, you know, maybe a little bit different path than I usually take with these conversations, but can we talk about your real estate investing journey? So when did you get started and the different niches you're investing in, and then, you know, where you're at now, maybe even approximately how many doors are in your portfolio at this point in time?
Yeah, sure. So it was 2015. I was a sophomore in college. I didn't take the traditional route, so I can say sophomore, but it was actually like I was 23, so it was like my fifth year of school. I transferred and bounced and played hockey and transfer credits don't always transfer and whatnot. So I was like 23. And I remember getting on Realtor and finding just a single family home in Laramie, Wyoming, University of Wyoming. And I wanted to put my teammates in it and basically just rent to my teammates. And the motivation was, okay, they can cover my mortgage. And we can have our own house where we kind of make the rules and, you know, we're hockey players, so we have fun. And that was kind of the motivation. At the time, I'd never heard the word cap rate. I've never heard the word, you know, being over leveraged or being leveraged. I'd never heard any of that. So it was just this little thought like, okay, well, let's fill it. We'll collect rent. We'll make the payment. So I found the house and I went to a mortgage source and they kind of just said, you're a sophomore in college and you want to try and get a mortgage. And I was like, yeah, what's wrong with that picture? And they were just like, okay, we need to educate you a little bit. So I got educated on a sophomore in college is not a good candidate for a loan. And my real estate agent negotiated seller finance on the house for me. So I didn't know what seller finance was. You know, I didn't know anything. So she showed me what seller finance was. So all I had to do was come up with the down payment. And I was doing engineering internships and whatnot. So I was employed, but still not a good candidate for a residential loan. But we got the house and that's what kicked it all off. So I did that one and I had to bring in some capital to do it. So I was able to bring in family members and whatnot to put this together. And it worked so well that I was able to bring other family members in. And we just started buying single family homes and then we bought a quadplex and we were doing it all in 2016 when sourcing debt wasn't too difficult and we were in a town where prices were really good with rental rates. So that's what started it off was just single family homes and then it turned into quadplexes and whatnot. And then in 2020, partnered up with a local agent here. And that's when we started going bigger. So we got into self-storage. We got into mobile home parks, RV parks, We have a car wash. We've got a boat rental company. And now we have a portfolio that goes from Wyoming to Tennessee to Texas. So let me ask you.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. Let me ask you real quick. Before 2020, how many doors would you say were at? And then 2020 to now, what did that growth sort of look like?
So 2019, we had 22 doors here in Wyoming.
So let me just pause you right there. So you went in 5 years, you accrued 22 doors. These are all SFRs, right?
Yeah. Well, so that, quads. You got some quads in there.
Quads. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you did say that. All right. So yeah, I apologize. That's amazing growth right there. And just, there's a lot of people, so many people get stuck in analysis paralysis, right? Sounds like you sort of fell into it. And did you guys thrash that your first house? Or I would just imagine hockey players in there just like destroying the place. But it sounds like that wasn't the case.
No, I lived in it for 2 years. So 16, 17, 18. Nobody got their security deposit back, including myself, right. including myself. So, it was a good house to be in, and they were my buddies and they understood what I was doing, and I understood that it was going to be a fun house, and it still is. Still own it. It's actually just 5 minutes away. It went from a hockey house to a frat house, to a snowmobiler house, back to a frat house. And it still cash flows very, very well.
That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. So 2019. Yeah. So 16 to 19, about 22 doors with a couple quads mixed in. And that was a good run. And then 2020 is when the mind shifted, the mindset definitely shifted. And we went much larger.
When your mindset shifted, was it a conversation you had? Did you have a mentor or somebody that you'd met? Or can you pinpoint what sort of kicked that off for you?
So I actually met one of the local brokers who was working some local deals with us. He brought us some houses and brought us a quadplex. It was his vision. His vision was large, and he always wanted to do self-storage. So a ton of credit to him on thinking larger. You can take down single family, and it's a great path. And I love that path. One of my companies is still just buying single family homes. And that's what it does. And that's what it's going to continue to do. But his mindset was, okay, let's go bigger. We can buy storage facilities. And this was when debt was much more attainable. And that's what we did. We went and found properties, and we raised money, and we made a few key partnerships that really kicked it all off. Now, that's one of my companies. I continued to roll the other two. And sometimes they partner up, and sometimes they do their own thing. But they're all kind of designed to benefit each other.
Something I heard is that in commercial real estate, you can make a huge difference in net worth and cash flow in your life in a relatively short time. So one, would you agree with that? Two, can we sort of talk, numbers about your portfolio, where it's at today? And then, because I think it's really important for the audience to learn what a human being can do in a span of, less than 8 years, right? So
sure. Sure. Yeah. And which one do you want to do first, Doug?
Do you feel like that's a pretty accurate, statement that someone can expand their net worth in a huge way, in their income in a big way with commercial real estate? Do you sort of wish you would have done it sooner as well?
I mean, going larger would have been nice to do it before 2019, just for market purposes. Yeah.
Makes sense, yeah.
Going backwards even further, it would have been nice to do it sooner, closer to 2009, probably the better, you could say. But it also comes with education, and it comes with network, and it comes with a ton of risk. So in commercial real estate, yes, you can accelerate fast. you can accelerate fast, but you can also decelerate fast as well. So you got to curb that risk. Because when you start syndicating or when you start raising money, like, okay, now you're risking their money. So you might be on the loan, you might be sponsoring it, you might be the guarantor. So you have plenty of risk, but you're also placing their cash. And I do have a few deals that were just really, really solid home run deals that accelerated our worth, our net worth, quickly. And we paid our investor great. And we all own a facility outright that we've already cash out refied and pulled all the money back. And, you know, we have a few examples where that went well. We also have examples where we decelerated fast and, there was, you know, elevated risk from the get-go and between interest rates or maybe our pro forma was a little bit stretched, like that deal wasn't as good as the other one. So yes, there is examples where you can hit that $1 million net worth very, very quickly in commercial real estate. There's also the opposite. And you just got to navigate the risk and figure out, you know, what is that deal that you go after? And the one that doesn't go well, how do you pivot? And in real estate, there's so many exits and there's so many safety nets, but you got to find them. So yeah, the answer to your first question is you can accelerate it fast. And usually it's through cash out refis, which right now aren't really happening because of interest rates. However, you can add value very quickly. And depending on whatever asset class you're investing in, quicker or slower, you know, storage is very, very fast. But you got to navigate it. And to say, I wish I'd done it sooner is easy to say, but you didn't have the network or the education or the experience or the W-2 supporting your balance sheet, you know, to make you a stronger borrower. So there's so many variables at play.
That makes sense. And okay, awesome. So let me ask you this. Can you share with us maybe one deal or one success in your life that you felt like, hey, this is one of the most that you're proud of, either that you solely created or were a part of a team and, you know, what you learned from that?
Sure. Yeah, I can share a refi deal that really kicked us off. And it was that 1 in 1,000 deal that I mentioned just a second ago. So my storage partner and I found a storage facility. I'll just use round numbers to make it simple. I'll just use real numbers to make it simple. We bought it for 1.3 and we did a refi on it 4 months later at 2.4. So we were able to take our investors' money and deploy it, buy the storage facility, operate it, and then source really, really attractive debt and do the cash out refi on it, which allowed us to pull out our cash and go do it again. That is like a textbook 2021 example that you can't do in 2024. Like it the rates, the market, the risk profiles of the banks are not there. Are there lenders who will do it? Yes. But we were successful because so many things lined up in the timeline, in the deal, in the investor that jumped in with us. But that was a good one. So we were able to return the money to our investor and basically go do it again. We haven't been able to repeat that good of a deal again. We've been able to get close and we made a model that we were able to replicate, but that was a home run. And those are tough to find.
Yeah, to stay on topic, what would you say is one sort of lesson that you're able to pull out of that whole, you know, that win right there?
Yeah, there's a great one. As good as that all sounded, when we leveraged it and refied it, we over-leveraged it. So we got fixated on, okay, let's pull out all this cash. We got this good appraisal. Let's pull out all this cash. We got 3.75% debt, but we went to 80 LTV and we shouldn't have. You know, we should have just scaled it back a little tiny bit. The deal now is it's pretty flat. It doesn't cash flow a ton. You know, luckily we locked in really, really low interest and we were able to pull that cash out. But the lesson there is don't over leverage because you can get yourself in trouble. And even if all that sounds really, really good, well, that final decision on where do you leverage it to and you know, who's your lender and what are the terms, like those are pretty critical too. Granted, in the end, it solved a lot of problems for us and it was the good deal that kicked us off. But that would be the lesson learned is in the end, you know, still run that cash flow and then rerun it and then double check yourself and then rate shock it and just make sure you're covered.
Yeah, and make sure you have a healthy cash flow in case of bad times, but also just to, that can support your, you know, investing. It can support your lifestyle if you want it to, right? But if it's too thin a margin, that can get scary, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great lesson. Yeah, I think it would be hard to do too, you know, until you had walked through it, right? So if not, you've walked through it, it'd be much easier. Hey, guys, we don't want to do that, right? So
it's easy to look at a spreadsheet and say, you know, this is how it's going to work and this will be our cash flow. Well, not always. Right. So just build that margin.
Okay. Love it. On the flip side, what would you say is one of the more incredibly difficult challenges that you walked through and maybe something that you learned from that?
We have some deals where maybe our due diligence wasn't as deep as it should have been. We've had some issues with neighbors. We've had some issues with property lines. We've had legal problems pop up after closing that you can never do too much due diligence. And if you have an opportunity to go a little bit deeper, do it. Like, you know, zoning, neighbors, you know, past issues. So a challenge there has been we've bought some deals that we should have gone deeper and it was just an experience or a short timeline or we weren't local. I mean, going to the property gives you a different perspective. And those have created deep challenges on the back end. So I would say you can never do too much due diligence to get over, to get past what could be a challenge down the road. Does that make sense?
It does.
So just spend your time, go deeper. Sometimes paying for an attorney is worth it, even if it's expensive up front, because paying for an attorney on the back end is sometimes much, much more. So those would be challenges that we've seen is just a couple deals that on the back end, some unknowns popped up that would have been nice to figure out before.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. That is great advice right there for sure. let me just shift the conversation a little bit and ask you, you know, if you were to take your mindset now, everything that you know now, and go back to, you know, when you sort of started just essentially, you know, professional life at age 18, would you do anything differently? Would you, you know, do anything differently to fast track that success?
Yeah, definitely. So it's easy to say, well, yeah, I'd just go back and I'd buy more. I'd buy everything because look at what the market did in 2019 or 20. It's easy to say that, but getting kind of behind that one would be learn how to do the hard things. So when it comes to the diligence side of you know your underwriting, like there's sexy parts of underwriting and there's not so sexy parts of underwriting, right? Learn how to do the hard stuff, the not fun stuff. Learn it young and learn how to do it well. That would be what I'd like to tell my 18, 19 year olds, other than just go buy every single thing that you can raise money for and raise money. Like learn right now, there's such a huge push for, you know, syndicating and raising money and whatnot. And it's not a new thing, but it's definitely something we're hearing a lot more of the last few years. Figure out how to do that. And then you can buy that stuff. But as an 18-year-old, you're not resourced to be able to go do that yourself. However, you can educate yourself and you can teach yourself to do the hard things, you know, learn Excel, master Excel, master the underwriting process and the difficult conversations that need to be had at a young age, and then keep those habits. You know, having the habit of being good at doing the hard things makes you a very attractive partner, makes you very good at this job, because there's a lot of hard things that aren't as fun as other things. So
right,
that would be my advice to myself, and to just set those habits up young.
There's a lot of things also, would you agree with this, that are hard to us, right? And if we have a good understanding of it, if we outsource that, then it's less likely for something to slip through the cracks, right? As long as it can be hard, we can still outsource it, but we should have a good understanding of it.
Agreed. When I was an engineer and I was a manager, I always told the operators or the supervisors that reported to me, is like, well, I'm not going to task you with something that I either haven't done myself or I don't understand or know how to do myself. So absolutely, when you build a team and you start gathering people to put a project together, you build that team based on what people are good at, what they like to do, what you might not be good at. But still having the understanding and being able to do it is critical. You can build the team to cover all areas of the puzzle, but you know, you still got to be able to talk the talk, and there's no replacement for doing it yourself or previously have done it yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's crucial, because like in this space of commercial real estate investing, to my understanding, I'm fairly new to it, is, you know, it's a team sport. And so a lot of this conversation has been around, you know, what to look for in a partner, even though that's not what we set out to do. But that's a piece of it, is before we're looking at, you know, to outsource a piece or bring on a partner, we want to understand that part that they're going to cover really well, so that, you know, again, there's multiple eyes on the same challenge, and it just helps everybody.
Or what happens if something changes and that partner's got to go a different direction and now you're covering that part, or your business expands and you need more people able to do that specific task. So, yeah, that's how you can stay rounded and stay covered.
That's a great point. Let me ask you this fun question. You know, if there was a key that helped you unlock success in life, in multiple areas, like hockey, sports, right? Hunting, you're an avid hunter, and just any area in life that you know, could put it to work towards, what would you say that key is?
Sorry, my family just passed behind me here.
Yeah, they're trying to be real ninja about it. So, I mean, you got to give them a lot of credit. I mean, they did an excellent job.
Sure. Yeah, I think learning how to talk to people and learning how to relate and learning how to be personable is very critical, because, well, Doug, you and I have talked about, you know, the 5 C's of credit, right? Or getting a loan, and one of them is character, like being able to talk to anyone. And maybe that's another good, like, go back and tell yourself at 18, like, develop that skill, because being that person that can communicate and I don't want to say talk the talk, because that comes with experience and comes with, you know, education and research and stuff. But that would be a huge part of success, and sports teach that. And, you know, family life teaches that, and exposure and experience teaches that. But that's a big key, in this world, in this real estate world.
Yeah. I love it. Awesome, man. Well, as we're getting close to wrapping this up, you know, let me ask you, can I ask you for one book recommendation? Is there a book that made a huge impact on you and got some ninjas crawling again? And, you know, just a book that's impacted you in a positive way.
Sure. Actually, when I try to read, my mind just goes a totally different direction. So I don't have a book, because I struggle to get through them. And, you know, before
Tyler Johnson's book of life that he's writing currently.
Yeah, maybe one day a book could be written, but no, I don't have a book. And before we jumped on this, Doug, I said I've never listened to a podcast, let alone even been on one. So no, I don't have a podcast, and I don't have a book that I could even say. You know, I've started all the famous ones, you know, Rich Dad Poor Dad, The Million Dollar Mindset. You know, I've started all of them, but I've never finished one. So,
well, I mean, it just goes to show you don't need to read books to like crush it in real estate, right?
The education's good, but you can get it other ways.
You ever try like listening to a book, like an audio book, or
I can't like focus on it. Like
I'm laughing because I'm the same exact way. So like, I have to listen to these things over and over and over and over to get stuff out of it, right? But for me to try to read a physical book, that's not going to happen. These here, I've read the audio version of this. I'm waiting for the audio version of this to come out. And, you know, so, but yeah, I'm super similar. It's just like all of a sudden, my mind wants to start working on something else. You know, it's kind of like meditating. I tried doing that a couple times. I'm just like, this is not even worth me attempting, really.
Right.
You know?
Like they can say something in the audiobook that gets you thinking, and then when you come back to the audiobook, it's like, well, I just missed 8 points and I don't totally know where you're at because I just thought about this problem here for the last 30 seconds. And so I definitely struggle in that area.
Well, I think if you got, you know, problem solving, like, you know, critical thinking, able to think logically, and you're able to network well, you know, and be driven, you know, that, I mean, there's so much more to you and to your character than that, but that's just sort of a couple of things that we can touch on that, you know, I really feel like, hey, it is inspiring. I mean, one of my core beliefs is that all of us, especially here in the US, but throughout a lot of nations in the world, we all can create the life of our dreams with from totally nothing, even negative, below nothing, from debt or the worst, you know, poverty level that you can imagine. We can all create that. And, you know, I think that we just need some things like a dream and a vision and people to believe in us. But the most important to believe in us is ourselves, right? And continue to get back up. And obviously, so you played college hockey for how many years?
Four or five years of what you could call competitive college hockey. Yeah.
And how many years before, how old were you when you started playing on hockey teams?
Four.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, that's four, 9 years.
Well, between four and, 27, hockey was huge in our life. My family's life, my little sister's life, my parents, and my whole family kind of revolved around that.
That's awesome. And how many times are you falling and getting back up again and missing and getting back up again and so on and so forth, making mistakes and getting recommitted to, hey, I want to do my best here. I want to have fun. I want to like excel at this.
Yeah, absolutely. Injuries set you back and you got to figure out how to get around the adversity. I think adversity is probably the word that you use there on learning how to get around that, whether it's a drought, you know, where you're not scoring goals or getting any points or injuries or, you know, overwork or tendonitis or, you know, whatever it might be, there teaches you a lot.
I love it. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining us, Tyler. As we, you know, do wrap this up in just a minute here, is there any particular type of deal that our audience can send your way? And what is the best way for our audience to connect with you?
Sure. Yeah. Specific deals. My portfolio is incredibly diverse. So I have like 12 different asset classes that are under my asset management. So we're pretty opportunistic. So if it makes sense, you know, we'll go for it. From U-Hauls to motels to storage to, I guess a boat rental company that's in the works as well. So no specific deals. I think we should probably tighten up our criteria a little bit and maybe get a little bit more focused, but no specifics other than you know, if it's a deal. Getting a hold of me, Facebook connection is good. Messenger. Doug, if you want to post my email address, I'm cool with that.
Okay. Yeah, I'll make sure and we throw both of those. I'll make sure and throw both of those, your Facebook, you know, how to connect with you on Facebook, and then your email address. And you know, I would love to have you on here, you know, more often. And so I'm going to talk with you about that later, you know, because literally there's hours upon hours upon hours of, you know, just crazy awesome, you know, mentorship and knowledge that we could learn from you, Tyler. So again, thank you so much for joining us, you know, on another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It, and looking forward to having you on here again. And audience, thank you so much for listening and watching. You have a wonderful rest of your day.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.
Are you ready to take your podcast to the next level? Introducing Chris Clark Media, your go-to solution for professional podcast editing and production services. At Chris Clark Media, we understand the power of a well-produced podcast. Whether you're a seasoned podcaster or just starting out, our team of experienced editors is here to make your content shine. Why choose Chris Clark Media? We offer a range of services tailored to meet your unique needs, from seamless audio and video editing to captivating intro music and engaging sound effects. We've got you covered. Our skilled editors work diligently to enhance your podcast quality, ensuring crystal clear audio and a professional finish. No more worrying about background noise or inconsistent levels. We've got it handled. But that's not all. We also offer custom podcast branding services, creating eye-catching cover art and compelling promotional materials to help you stand out in the crowded podcasting space. Are you ready to elevate your podcasting game? Visit chrisclarkmedia.com today and explore our affordable packages. Let us handle the technicalities so you can focus on what you do best, creating amazing content. Chris Clark Media, your success, our expertise. Start your podcasting journey with us today.